Welcome to Shattering Myths. I do want to spend a little more time on the Ukraine. I think it is incredibly dangerous what we have doing and incredibly disingenuous what we have been saying. You have on one side people incorrectly presented as peaceful protesters when they not only shot guns, but they kidnapped policemen. And in addition to that, they occupied and destroyed property in their central square in the capital of Kiev, and they used Molotov cocktails. And yet, when they got the elected president of the Ukraine to flee for his life because of their belligerence, they were presented in the West as freedom-seeking Democrats, loving a relationship with the West and despising Russia. It's all Cold War rhetoric. And yet, when it was published that the Undersecretary of State and the Ambassador to Ukraine were saying F the EU and trying to inspire Ukrainians to act against Russia, no one put the pieces together and said, wait a minute, that's what the CIA used to do. That's what we used to do as a country. That we're the instigators here. And then when Obama's tongue-lashed Putin and said, you know, he's still living in the Cold War, should have been pointing the finger at himself. And then to have all of the media thoughtlessly go along with what is obviously the antithesis of what's actually happening and report the same kind of rubbish, it makes them look like they're part and parcel of the deception. And this is not an issue that is capable of being swept under the carpet. This is the prelude to war. NATO has just announced that it's maneuvering all of its weapons into position to defend its allies. And Russia's been put in a position where, what are they going to do? The Ukrainian government is now bringing its military against the Russian, ethnic Russians in that country. What is Russia going to do? What must they do? Yes, sir.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay, I was going to say. Well, first of all, just to answer your immediate question there, I think the obvious thing, the first step, I think, would be tactical air support. You know, if I can see, we've seen some aerial activity with a Russian aircraft buzzing the U.S. ship in the Black Sea, which shouldn't be there anyway. And then they're going to be doing something unprofessional. But I mean, even before they send troops in, I can see if the Ukrainians start killing ethnic Russians, I can see some tactical air support blowing up a few tanks or trucks just to make an initial point.
And yesterday there was incidents of gunfire where the communities that the Ukrainian military had gone into with its helicopters and armored personnel carriers, that it began shooting. And what's really making this thing a mess is that the Ukrainian army positions and bases throughout the eastern Ukraine are more likely to leave the base carrying Russian flags than they are Ukrainian flags.
Right.
I mean,
right.
If Russia does not intervene, this is going to turn out to be a civil war. And if Russia does intervene, then with the United States rhetoric and its, you know, using its puppet of NATO, then it's going to be world war.
Right. If you over the weekend, I follow a number of different people who study on this. Over the weekend, I was listening to the historian, economist, lobbyist Webster Tarpley, who does. He's a little too left for me, but in general, but he is an amazingly erudite historian, and couple that with some of the what Joel Skousen has been talking about where this is going over the long term. You know, Tarpley makes the point that the very notion of Ukraine as a nation state was basically a fabrication of the German general staff circa World War One, you know, post-World War One era. And you know, historically, they were known as Little Russia. You had Belarus,
of course,
was White Russia, and Ukraine was Little Russia. And culturally, they've always been yoked to Russia. And then, and so the German general staff...
For 300 years, in fact, if you go back beyond 300 years, for 300 years, for longer than America has been a nation, they have been part of Russia. And prior to that, they were not independent. They were never, there has never been in the history of Europe a independent Ukraine, ever.
They don't have the economy or the political, you know, mentality or imaginations to make it work as a nation state.
No, but also, let's also go into this, the new world. The new world is that you take a country that was a small country like Yugoslavia, and you divide Yugoslavia into about 8 different pieces. That might be a slight exaggeration. I don't know if there's 5 or 6 nations that have been carved out of Yugoslavia. But every little ethnic minority wants their own independent nation. And what we're creating is places like Kosovo, and we're creating places that Bosnia that don't have the wherewithal to be a nation.
You balkanize, you make these dependent little entities which require management by entities like the EU, or, you know.
Correct. You know. And what's happening here, and this is what's really fascinating about the whole thing in the Balkans, which is where America is now is flying its warplanes aggressively at Russia. You know, we scold Russia for having troops on its border in the Ukraine. Excuse me, on its border in Russian territory, and we're scolding them for having their troops along the Ukrainian border, but in Russia. And NATO is bragging about how many troops, how many weapon systems, how many fighters, how many tanks we are now mobilizing in countries that aren't ours, adjacent to Russia. And it's, we're positioning ourselves for war, but, you know, in Crimea...
They're cannibalizing equipment from the National Guard units to rotate over there.
Oh, of course. And if you look at Crimea, Crimea was one of the wisest, most sane, most civilized transfers of power that you're probably ever going to see. No one was killed. Not a shot was fired. There was no military invasion. The people said, okay, we don't like what you did in the Ukraine. We're going to take a referendum. And they voted 97% not to be part of the mob rule in the Ukraine and wanted to rejoin Russia. I don't know how it gets any better than that.
Well, in a country coming from us, a country with hackable electronic voting machines and vote fraud in every election now, you know, we of course have to turn around and allege that that was a rigged election referendum. You know,
but there's no evidence whatsoever that it was rigged.
Who?
And by the way,
that's when you have an agenda.
Of course, you get back to the reality that these are Russians that have been part of Russia for 300 years that want to be part of Russia again. And because the whole experiment of the Ukraine has been an utter and complete disaster, they just don't want to be part of it anymore. It is, you know, here's a country that has only existed for 20 years. They've had 2 revolutions. They've not only been bankrupt multiple times, they've reneged against the IMF on loans where they committed to adhere to certain policies, and then they reneged on those policies 4 out of 4 times. And then they have created some 10 different agreements with the Russians on natural gas prices and on pipeline transit fees across the Ukraine for that freedom friendship pipeline. And you know how many times they have not only siphoned gas out of the pipeline and not paid their bills? Of those 8 agreements, 8 times.
Right.
8 times. And so Russia now says, you owe us $2 billion. Why should we continue to send gas to you?
Right.
And you continue, and every time the Ukraine is caught siphoning off enormous quantities of gas and not paying the Russians for it, in complete conflict with their agreements, The Ukraine always says, oh, no, we didn't do it. It's those Russians. They're all making all sorts of claims, false claims. And then the Russians will prove it in international court, and the international court will say, come on, Ukrainians, pay up. And they'll make an agreement to pay, and they'll renege on it again. I mean, they're deadbeats. Well, that's not to say that every Ukrainian is a deadbeat. But as a nation, they are anti-Semitic, violent deadbeats.
But of course, the U.S. has to like deny. Although I saw somebody reviling the notion that that they were fascist, you know, that the new government was fascist. It just cracks me up because they're so. I mean, certainly Tymoshenko used fascists to rouse the rabble, but again, she herself is of a communist persuasion mostly.
Oh, the most popular person in the uprising of the rebels that now are the government of the Ukraine is the very person who got herself caught in one of those. In fact, one of these days I'm going to do a complete analysis of the gas relationships with Ukraine, because if you don't understand gas in Ukraine and Russia, there's no way to politically understand or economically understand what's going on there. But she got caught lining her own pockets in one of those deals. Yeah, she got caught. That's why she was in prison. And now to have her be opposed to Russia as this great patriarch of freedom and truth is, man, we are just living in a make believe world. But it's a make believe world right now with NATO itching for a fight.
Don't you know we can ship natural gas from the Pennsylvania oil shale field and stuff, you know?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, just put it on ships and send it over and meet that need that way. Sure, we will. Now, if you look at what Joel Skousen's been writing for a long time, he's a little different than some people writing about the New World Order thing and that globalist sort of thing. He's less urgent on the economic front, saying that they can string this along for a longer period of time, and that, yes, they do have a world war in mind.
Right.
But as I watch,
I agree, they do.
In the economies right now, I'm sitting here watching the economy, the market switch change on the overnight. And on a daily basis, you can watch money flowing out of the westernized markets and into the BRICS nations, and then back again. So they've got this dialectic going between the BRICS and the NATO and stuff like that.
It's just amazing how no one seems to understand that Russia is not going to continue to supply gas to the Ukraine or through that pipeline without being paid for it. And the consequences of them shutting off the flow. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Along this story, Glenn mentioned that the USS Donald Cook, which is a destroyer, it is a missile launch platform. It's armed to the gills with the ability to kill and destroy with long and short range missiles. It decided to provoke the Russians by sailing into the Black Sea, and then the United States called the Russians unprofessional. They called the Russians reckless because the Russians flew two clearly unarmed jets near the destroyer. It's amazing that these people can actually utter this and that news agencies can report it without just bending over in laughter or being disgraced one way or the other. Glenn, please stay with us. We've got Nick having called in from Wisconsin. Hello, Nick. It's good to hear from you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, did you take down the Prophet of Doom? I heard you took down the website.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked. For many years, Muslims have threatened to kill me unless I take down the site. And for years, I've just ignored them. And then they decided that since they couldn't refute anything on the website, and no Muslim has, that they would perpetrate denial of service attacks on it. It's what is done routinely to offshore casino sites and gambling sites, where they will have computers that make requests of the site every fraction of a second is 24/7, and it robs bandwidth, and it makes it not only impossible for anyone else to visit the site, but whoever is hosting the site can't afford the degradation of bandwidth for all of their customers because of what is being perpetrated against the site. So Muslims have decided that that they are so afraid of the truth that they would continually hack the site. Now, there is a solution for that problem, Nick, but the in the casino world, they initially pay bribes to get their sites back up, and then they prosecute the individuals, but very expensive software and hosting facilities have been created specifically to resolve that problem. Now, with Prophet of Doom, I give away my research free. You know, the parallel Qurans, the five Qurans set in parallel, are all there free. Only site in the world like that. The entire presentation of Prophet of Doom was available in HTML for you to download and PDF for you to print and HTML and MP3 for you to listen to. And so, and then there was also all of the other supporting research and documentation, including the most used part of the site, which was Islam and Muhammad's own words, which represented the whole book topically. And so, since I give it away free, I don't sell anything, it's very difficult for me to justify the enormous cost associated with making the site impervious to attacks. And the last time we had the most serious attack, it cost me many thousands of dollars because of the added bandwidth usage. So that is where we're at now. It is a real problem. It is very expensive for me to resolve these problems. The guy that has created the operating system for the site, which is probably the best in the world at what it does, that he donates his time to this project, and collectively, Nick, I don't know of a practical solution as to how we bring the Prophet of Doom site back online.
Simplified by many, you know, there's a whole bunch of free websites out there just put up the content and
yes.
Make unlimited amount of...
Yes. Yeah, there are lots and lots of places where Prophet of Doom is available, that that websites have copied it and made it available. And it's, you know, the whole thing is available on YouTube. It's available at many hundreds of websites around the world. And I do hope that one day we find a resolution for this problem. But it is it's an ongoing problem, and it is causing us serious problems with the hosting also of Yada Yah, Introduction to God and Questioning Paul, and as well as the Yada Yah Forum, because they all have previously operated from the same database. So it is a serious problem.
Can they fight fire with fire, like, you know, identify the source and attack them?
No, I don't play that game, but I appreciate it. Nick, if you want to stay with us, we'll be right back to you after the break. And Glenn, please stay with us as well. We are going to, however, move to a far more interesting topic, which is Yahweh's testimony, after we return to Shattering Myths. Stay with us. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am Yana. We have both Nick and Glenn on the phone. Before I turn to the Torah's explanation of these wonderful celebrations that we're in the midst of, yesterday, today, and the day prior to that, I want to make sure that we have addressed any question or concern that might have been on Nick's mind. Floor is yours, my friend.
Yeah, you said you bought a whole bunch of books and scripts, mm-hmm. and everything that helped you with the studying Torah and reading the Torah.
Yes, yes. Uh-huh.
Do you have any of it online in digital format where I can just go up and try to, you know, translate it myself instead of reading the,
let me explain that process. And by the way, the list of all of the resources that I use is available both in the opening book of yadaya.com and also in the opening volume of IntroToGod.org. So the list is published of the tools that I used. When I began the process, Nick, I purchased a number of interlinears. And an interlinear is a book that has the Hebrew and the English side by side. So you can, it's the best way to not only see the Hebrew and English together, so you become familiar with the sentence structure and the grammar and that sort of thing. But it also provides a quick reference to pronouns and conjunctions and that sort of thing that in Hebrew are, and like many languages, are integrated into the words themselves. So it is a very effective tool from that point of view. And I got a half a dozen of them in interlinears in hardback form. And then I bought lexicons and dictionaries, Hebrew-English lexicons and dictionaries that and also Greek-English lexicons and dictionaries. So I use the Greek a lot less than I use the Hebrew. And what I found is that if I only had one that is like the guy with one watch and he thinks he knows what time it is. And if you have three or four, you realize they all present something slightly different, and you really need to think your way through the process by using more than one resource. And so all of those books is what I started with. I probably had 25 Hebrew-English dictionaries, lexicons, and the five or six interlinears. And that's how I began, along with I had a copy of the text of the earliest Greek New Testament manuscripts, and also a number of books on the Dead Sea Scrolls, so I understood what we had to work with, as well as a tool that I think is really helpful. It's called the Dead Sea Scrolls Bible. The translation isn't particularly good. It's no better than any of the others, maybe slightly. But what it does is it italicizes every word that's found in the Dead Sea Scrolls that differs from the Masoretic text, and then references what that difference is. So you have the ability to know what the differences have been, because all the study tools are on the Masoretic. All right, so that's the tools that I used. I've published all of that information. But now, to answer your question, I don't have the copyright, therefore the legal right, to republish any dictionary or lexicon. Now, I can reprint the Quran, for example, on the Prophet of Doom site, even though it's a translation and has copyright because of the public rights to know. Yeah, the public has a right to know. If people are threatening the public has a right to know why they're threatening. And so I have what's called fair use, and I can promote and I can publish the entirety of a Quran. Even though it has copyright issues, it's the public's right to know. The public does not have a right to know somebody's work as a Hebrew English dictionary or lexicon. Now, even though that's the case, so I can't publish those tools that I use, although I can tell you what the tools are. There, if you were to Google Hebrew English interlinear. In fact, I would go it this way. I would say free online Hebrew-English interlinear, so you don't have to, you won't be taken to sites that want to sell you a hardback, because the hardbacks are really expensive. But if you Google free online Hebrew-English interlinear, you'll be brought to at least 20 sites that provide them free for you. And then if you were to Google free online Hebrew-English dictionary, you'll be taken to another 20 sites, some of them overlapping, that will provide those tools for you for free. So there is an online version of all of those things, and I don't know what those sites did in terms of financial relationships with the publishers to enable them to provide those tools online free. But nonetheless, they are sites that are in business to sell things, and they have provided those tools for you for free. Now, after you've used the online tools for free, and there's some good ones, then the next thing that I would consider doing if I were you is to look at. There's three companies that make integrated software. Because the challenge of being online is you've got to be online when you're using the tools, and you've got to go between various sites, and it's not all interconnected as well as some of the software. There are three companies that make software. I use Logos, but the interactive software is particularly time-saving.
You're taking it too far. I will find ways to you know where to go and how to get the things. Mm-hmm. What I need is to see the Torah. The Torah does not have the copyright. It's the God written.
The interlinears will provide you with the Torah, the first five books of the Hebrew Torah, Prophets, and Psalms is the Torah. So if you Google Hebrew-English interlinear, you'll probably have to Google Old Testament along with it, because that's the terms that the scholars use, unfortunately. It will take you to the first five books will be the Torah.
And do you have any, you know, websites where trustful, where I can, you know, be sure that it's not changed by...
No, every single one of those sites is going to present the Masoretic text. Every single one of them. And then if you purchase the book, and I think you have to purchase it because I don't think it's available by any site free online, the Dead Sea Scrolls Bible, you'll be able to know where the Dead Sea Scrolls differ from the Masoretic text. But every one of those sites is going to present exactly the same Hebrew words as they are found in the Masoretic text.
Aren't they, like, stupid then? Why would they do it if it hurts them? I mean, if someone would have translated, they would understand that it's not Old Testament at all.
Yeah, I think the reason is that even given access to the information, most people are unwilling to invest the time. And so, yes, you know, if you look at, for example, Logos, which I no longer recommend, which is this tool that I use the most. It is openly Christian. It is, I mean, 90% of what you get with Logos is not only useless, it's counterproductive. It's a bunch of Christian lies. And yet they provide the tool that proves that their religion is wrong. You know,
well,
you just,
very stupid and very nice of them. So
Now, and Logos, which is the integrated tool, which will give you, you know, with Logos, if you get the original languages version, it'll come complete with at least three or four interlinear. So you'll be able to read the Torah as in an interlinear form, which is really helpful. But it'll have three or four interlinears. One of them you can use as the backbone for your study. You pick whichever one you want. I usually have two interlinears up at the same time. And then it will let you choose how many lexicons you want to have available to you at any one time. I choose typically 20 to 25 lexicons that I review constantly, dictionaries. And then it will also give you a direct link to the stem of every verb, the conjugation of every verb, and the mood of every verb, as well as whether the nouns, for example, are masculine or feminine, and whether things are plural or singular. And as you're beginning to learn how to translate, having that information, and, you know, somebody explain what the hyphal stem means, you know, that's where the subject causes the object to engage in the action as an understudy. You know, having that reinforced and available at your fingertips, that's pretty helpful.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Thank you.
But I want to tell you, Nick, there is nothing you can do you will find more valuable. Now, I would also recommend you do one thing if you haven't already. IntroToGod.org was written expressly to prepare, to equip someone who is engaging in this process like you are, to maximize their learning curve. And so what it does is it goes through, here are all of the manuscripts that are available to us. Here's the history of the manuscripts. Here's variety of academic tools that you can use to evaluate these manuscripts. Here's the history of the alphabet itself and what the letters of the alphabet originally represented. It is going to provide you a review of what stems mean in Hebrew and how to apply them, what the conjugations mean and how to apply them, what the moods mean and how to apply them. And then after it provides you with all of those tools, It's then going to go through using those tools and showing you how to use those tools, actually using them to translate the Torah. So in the introduction to God, introtogod.org, you're going to find a huge amount of the Torah translated using those tools, which gets you, you know, ingrained in the process. And then what you can do initially is to use the tools that I'm talking about to verify whether or not what I've got there is right, or whether it's incomplete, or whether you can add to it, or whether you want to look at it a different perspective. That's a really valuable part of the process. So introtogod.org will get you going with a fast start and a good foundation.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
All right.
For the info.
All right.
I'll hang up and listen.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you, Nick. And you know, call back if you start this process and you run into some roadblocks. You know, call back. I'm going to tell you that if I look at my first attempts at translations, well, I think they were substantially better than the English translations that are available to us. Today, after having done it now for 8 or 9 years. I can produce a vastly more accurate and complete translation than I could back 8 years ago. And so there is a real value in doing it and just in the process of engaging. But it's also because as you focus on these translations, you come to know Yahweh better and what he's offering better, and then everything you read fits into the same exact perspective and presentation of his plan, and it becomes easier and easier as you go forward to correctly render God's word. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Speaking of the beginning of these 3 days, Yahweh said, "I am Yahweh." Now, that ought to have been enough to get most people's attention, to keep people from making stupid statements like saying that Passover was a Jewish observance, that if you're celebrating Passover, you must be Jewish. He began to say, he said, "I am Yahweh." He didn't say, "I am Jewish." He said, "I am Yahweh." And then he told us what the blood represents that was on the doorway, the upright poles of the framework for that doorway and the lintel. And he said, "The blood will exist for you as a sign." For you as a sign. God didn't say, "The blood will exist for me as a sign." You know, God's pretty smart. He pretty well has this figured out. That it will exist for you as a sign. On the homes where, by way of the relationship, you are at that time. So when I see the blood, I will choose to actually pass over you on that account. Passover for what? What was happening to those he didn't pass over? The firstborn sons were dying. Pretty obvious then that Passover and the sign of Passover is the portal to life. Then, in case you didn't get that, though, by the obvious inference, by making reasonable connections, God goes on to say, "The plague leading to death and destruction shall not exist among you. When I strike the realm of the crucible of Egypt, this day on your behalf shall always exist as a memorial and reminder."
Yeah.
Go ahead, Glenn, and then I'm going to talk about the plague of death.
I need about 1 minute to close off, and then I can drop off and listen. But
okay.
I wanted to bring closure. First of all, Nick Guy again, he called in looking for free lexical aids and asked church questions at 16 RPMs, to which you respond by burning an entire segment at 78 RPMs, and I'm not sure how much money he actually got.
About the third time
you've been through it with him on the air. Hyperlink.
But Glenn, I knew the specific question that he asked, and yet we do the show for the listeners at large, and the purpose of the show is to introduce people to Yahweh's testimony. And so if by providing a more comprehensive answer, grassroots, this is what's available, this is how you go about doing it, these are the challenges and opportunities, I felt that was better for our specific answer. And very seldom, Glenn, like even if I'm talking to you, and I enjoy our discussions on this program, Glenn, but a lot of the times when I'm talking to you, I will revert back to trying to put what you said into a greater context, because the real purpose of the show is for the listening audience as a whole. So you're right, I did do that, but I did it for a purpose.
But even I was having trouble keeping up. I think people have trouble listening that fast to that much.
Oh, okay. So that was another. Now that is an issue, and I've always had that. And that is a very valid criticism. And what I've always been accused of about anything that I'm passionate about is that I spew out information at the rate of a fire hose, and most people prefer to drink at the rate of a drinking fountain. And so it becomes way too much information, way too fast for most people to process. And I want to tell you that I am absolutely guilty of that. I don't know of a way to avoid the problem other than repetition. In other words, if you spew out a lot of information very quickly, but you repeat it, then people, about the seventh or eighth time you've repeated it, you know, people are pretty much up to speed. But, Glenn, I've got a lot of faults, as I'm sure most people do. But just like most people, I've also got a couple of strengths. And one of my strengths is that my mind does process information at a reasonably fast rate of speed. It's why I enjoy Yahweh's testimony so much, because I can let my mind race at full speed, and I'm just constantly finding connections that inspire understanding. So, I mean, I really like doing this because it operates at the same speed that my mind does, and then my enthusiasm for it sometimes causes me to spew out too much information too fast, and I get it. You are right. I stand properly accused.
It takes one to know one. Left brain concrete, linear verbal.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, so I gotta go take care of somebody. Let me finish up. The blatant hypocrisy of U.S. complaining about this Russian flyover. This is we're the nation who, from the time of the F-4 Phantom through the times of the F-15 Eagle and the F-16 Falcon, routinely escorted Russian bear bombers, you know, over international waters near the Aleutian Islands.
Correct.
To bitch about that, it's just ridiculous.
Boy, are you ever correct? You're correct. We're pure hypocrites. I agree with you. I'm glad you finished that thought. Thank you, Glenn. Join us again tomorrow.